everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Packers Podcast. It's brought to you by Cannon and Dunphy, and we thank them for their support. My name is Michael Cohen, and I'm here, as always, with Bob McGinn. It is late on a Thursday evening at McGinn HQ. How's it going, Bob?
Good, Mike.
It's cold out today.
Very.
It's cold in my car on the way over here.
The freeze warnings tonight.
What's the game day weather?
I don't know.
I think I read 60 and okay in terms of sun. So that'll be interesting, but the cold weather's coming. How long before we see snow? What do you think? Do we see snow in the next 2 weeks?
No.
3 weeks.
Something to stick?
No, just the first flurries.
Yeah, 3 weeks.
3 weeks, okay. All right.
I don't think so.
But before that, we got to go on a road trip this weekend, Bob.
Yeah, we're heading up north.
You roped me into a road trip.
To my beloved UP.
My first experience with this magical land you speak so fondly of.
Jack Pine Savage is the last frontier, Mike.
The Alpha Mastodons.
All right, why are we going up there, Mike?
Well, I believe we're going to see a concert, and the artist is one that we've used on this very podcast, your selection, so you can tell everybody what the show is.
We're going up to the Island Resort and Casino in Harris, Michigan. Park River Harris.
How far from Green Bay?
2 hours.
Okay.
And at 8 o'clock Eastern Time Saturday night, we are seeing from Flint, Michigan, Grand Funk Railroad, or Grand Funk later. I think they got rid of the word railroad. And should be quite a show. Now, Mike, you have a friend who saw these guys recently.
Yeah, one of my friends in Connecticut, his father went to see the show at a casino in Connecticut maybe around Christmas time. Maybe in the spring. The spring it was, yeah. And he said they put on a heck of a show. You know, they play all their old hits that everybody knows. Then they play some of their newer stuff. And the energy, he said, is what you'll take away from the most, is that it's a show that you can tell they still want to be doing this. It's not guys that are just there for a check. So I'm excited. It should be fun. I've never been to the UP, Bob.
We're an American band, huh, Mike?
Yes.
Omaha. And we proceeded to tear that hotel down, huh?
Yes, exactly.
Hope they don't tear down the casino.
I don't think so. Playing two shows.
Oh, all right. Two shows on Saturday?
No, I think one's tomorrow and one's Saturday.
Okay.
Or maybe it's Saturday, Sunday, but there's two in a row.
Mr. Mark Farner is the lead singer. Now, is he?
He's the one that's not there. Ugh. So it's the two other original members.
That's painful.
At least according to the website, anyway.
All right.
So that'll be our Saturday excursion. We'll get back fairly late. Then we got an afternoon game on Sunday.
All right, Mike. Now, that leads us into the discussion of the music that I selected this evening, right?
Yes. Okay. Which also originated somehow at Lambeau Field. So tell them the circumstances that this came to be.
Must have been in the first half, right?
Yeah.
A stoppage of play.
Yep.
All of a sudden, Mike McKenna, the musical maestro at Lambeau Field, former sports director
at
Channel
2.
Oh, yeah. He punches all the buttons up there.
Okay.
Former sports director at Channel 2 Green Bay, a good friend, and a heck of a softball player, and a very intense golfer. All right, Mike McKenna. He punched the buttons on Rare Earth, Get Ready, April of 1970. And Mike, it played for about 10 seconds. I looked down at you across our colleague Tom Silverstein, and you were smiling. And I said, that's my pick for the podcast this week.
We had the same thought. I was about to say the same thing, and you beat me to the punch.
So the drummer, Pete Rivera, is pounding that thing out. And you look at the video on that, and he's in his wife beater, and he's slamming it out in 1970.
It's pretty interesting. You don't often see drummers that are singing lead vocals for a band, so that's pretty unique. And, I guess it's more common that you see shirtless guitar players and bass players, and they had those in this band as well in this video that's online. But there's two versions of this song. This is the second one. I wouldn't consider it a remake necessarily, just sort of an alternate take. The original was by The Temptations featuring Smokey Robinson. Has more of a softer Motown feel to it, whereas this is more edgy, more...
Was Smokey Robinson with The Temptations?
No.
Oh, but he was on that song.
The Temptations featuring Smokey Robinson.
Really?
Yeah. He sang lead vocals. Huh. But he wasn't part of the band, correct?
Okay, right.
Yeah.
Okay. Rare Earth was one of the first white bands ever signed by Motown, Berry Gordy.
That's true. I read that.
They're from Detroit.
Yeah.
And they were around for about 3 years, kind of, and I like them.
They didn't have much else, did they?
No.
Okay.
I Just Want to Celebrate was their...
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right.
It's a heck of a song, this one we got, Mike, right?
Yes, it is. Of course it is, yeah.
Two minutes and 45 seconds of...
It's good. You can't listen to it and not enjoy it.
They're throwing down, Mike.
Of course they are. It's a great song. It's a great song.
Okay.
But enough about that. Mm-hmm. Time to get to more important things.
Do we have to?
I guess. We're paid to do it, so okay. We might as well. So let's start with, I guess, a little bit of a revisit, so to speak, of last week's game. The Packers beat the Giants. What was it, 23-16? Does that sound right?
That's right.
23-16. Another game that had not a very good performance by the Packers. It's strange. They're 3-1. We're four games into the season, and you could argue that they've only played one half of really good football. They've had some other halves that have been solid, but only one half of really good football, and it was that first half against Detroit. So I guess first and foremost, going into the game, everyone wondered what would happen with Odell Beckham, what would happen with the Packers secondary without Sam Shields, without Demaryius Randall. I thought it was going to be tilted drastically in favor of the Giants. I was very, very wrong. I was very impressed with how the Packers' corners held up. What did you think?
A good plan by Dom Capers. Kept those safeties back, dared them to run. His run defense stuffed the heck out of Orleans Darkwa and whoever else they had trying
Paul
to
Perkins
run.
Perkins and Bobby Rainey and real motley crew they had there.
And the corners, we had Ladarius Gunter, and there was Quentin Rollins, and Micah Hyde moved to the slot. So, Mike, how did you think the secondary held up?
I was impressed. I really was. You know, Rollins is still a guy that I think gives up more catches than he needs to. I feel like he plays with a little bit too much respect for certain receivers. And, you know, you saw a couple slants to Beckham where he wasn't necessarily even that close to him at the time of the catch. But Gunter is the one that really impressed me. You know, this is a guy that's an undrafted free agent. What does he run, 4.67?
Yeah.
It's really slow. I'm really slow, considering Shields is 4.39?
Shields, 4.30.
4.30. So you're talking about a real significant difference between Gunter and Shields. But boy, he played his tail off. I was so impressed.
Yeah, no doubt. He's a big guy. He's physical. Now, he knew he had safety help, Mike, right?
It's a different world. Yep.
It really is. But so what? He played. He played to his help. He was physical with Beckham. I think I looked at every play and I wrote down where they were. He was on Beckham's side, I think, 29 times, and Rollins 23, and he never gave up a completion.
Nope.
By my count, he might be their most effective cornerback right now, Mike.
I was just going to ask you: did he earn more playing time?
Yes.
You think so?
Definitely.
So you don't think it was just predicated on scheme? You think they'd still trust him if they're playing a lot of man?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Do you? You're not sure.
I don't
sure.
think they'd give him as many snaps, which obviously this was out of necessity, but I don't know. I just think they worry about the speed a little bit. I mean, we saw how that speed could be exposed in Jacksonville. Granted, first game of the season, mm-hmm. first time he'd played in that position, but still. It shows you that there's going to be times where he just can't keep pace with guys. I do think he's warranted more playing time. I don't know if I would necessarily start him over somebody else.
Okay.
I don't know.
So we don't know if Demaryius Randall's going to play this week with his, what's he got, groin?
Groin injury, yeah.
And so we're talking Thursday night. He was at practice today?
He was at practice today, limited. Limited yesterday as well, but he didn't really do much of anything when we were in there during the portions of practice that are open for us to see. So I think it's a legitimate question mark of whether he's going to play this weekend. And Shields is probably not going to play this weekend. It would be extremely far-fetched at this point for him to be able to make it for Sunday. So you're looking at Rollins, Gunter, Hawkins, and then number 39, perhaps, Demetri Goodson, whose four-game suspension for performance-enhancing drugs has now expired. We were talking about this briefly before we started recording. The question is whether or not they activate him. They've got Goodson and Mike Pinnell to choose from. They don't have to activate them. Their roster exemptions last through Monday. So in theory, neither guy could be activated, neither guy could play, and they could still be on the team come Monday. So we'll talk about Pinnell in a second, but how do you see potentially it playing out for Goodson? I know that it could go both ways, but what do you kind of see there?
Okay, yeah, they got to do something at running back, we think, Mike. Okay, and got to do something with Pinnell. They cut Callahan today, so they're at 52. Goodson's an excellent special teams player. He really is. He's an aggressive guy. Is he better than Hawkins as a cornerback right now? I don't think so, personally.
Not without playing in a month.
I'm still high on Hawkins.
Okay.
I don't care what happened on that play.
And you mentioned about him being such a good special teams player. Remember, if Randall can't go, he is a valuable special teams player for them, too. He plays a lot in those gunner and hold-up positions, and I believe he's also on kick coverage.
I'm higher on Goodson than you guys were, as we've discussed.
No, we've been the same. It's Tom
Tom was. Okay.
Yeah, you and I agreed on Goodson. Tom was less fond of him in camp. I think he's a decent player.
I don't see him wanting to get rid of Marwin Evans.
No?
I don't think so. And Bryce obviously is here forever. So now Chris Banjo, could that be an IR move? Maybe.
Boy, I feel bad for the guy. You know, two hamstring injuries in the span of a month, one on each leg, so it's not the same problem flaring up. It didn't look good. You know, I talked to him in the game or in the locker room after the game against the Giants. He was pretty despondent. Now, you don't know if that's just the initial reaction to getting hurt, which it certainly might be, but it didn't necessarily seem like a quick turnaround for him, so we'll have to see. He has not practiced this week either.
It could very well be IR.
Could be.
Yep.
Could be. There's not too many other places they can go.
No.
So we'll have to see what happens there. Now, Pinnell, I think you and I agree, Pinnell will play this weekend. I'd be surprised if he didn't, frankly.
Yeah, they're going to be playing a bunch of base for the first time all year. So I think he will, too.
And, I know we don't necessarily always like to talk about guys that get cut, but I think the logical move is Brian Price. I think there's no question that that's going to be the move that's made. And if Brian clears waivers, I'm sure they'll want him back on the practice squad.
Ringo stays over Price.
I think so.
Yeah, because Pinnell is more of a big man. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I see that.
Now, Pinnell was coming off a tremendous training camp, wasn't he? I thought he played very, very well in camp.
I wouldn't go that far, but I liked what he did.
Okay.
I liked what he did, yeah.
It was his best training camp of his career. Granted, that doesn't say a whole lot, but it...
I liked him last year, too, Mike.
Okay, I wasn't that high on him last year.
Okay.
All right. So, with him in there, the base... If he was able to play from the beginning, the base defense would have been him, Guyon, and Daniels, right?
Yeah.
Who would have played nose? Him or Guyon?
Guyon.
Okay, so Guyon plays nose. Pinnell plays, what, 5-tech?
Yeah.
And Daniels plays 3.
Right.
So now, instead of that, we haven't seen base at all, really. We don't really know what their base is. Dean Lowry was forever listed as the starter on the depth chart, but it was Dayton Jones that actually played. We don't know if that would have changed by now. We don't know if they would have kicked Guyon outside to a 5-tech and then put
Clark.
Kenny Clark, thank you, in at nose tackle. So we haven't seen their base in a while. It's going to be an interesting thing to see what Capers does there.
Not a snap of base 3-4 last week. I've never heard of that.
It's crazy.
Not one.
It's crazy.
The Giants were 3 wide the whole game, and away you go. 4 to it.
One of the players that, again, had a very strong game against the Giants was Nick Perry, an outside linebacker who is really enjoying a strong start to the season. You wrote about him in a story that is up online now, Thursday night, and will be in Friday's paper. You've covered him much longer than I have. You've been here his whole career, obviously. What do you make of this year for Nick Perry, given the track record he had coming into this season?
Well, Mike, I thought, I had a couple days to think about this and talk to some people, and I'm saying that he's the defensive MVP right now and probably the overall MVP of the team.
Oh, I thought you were going to say the league.
I'm not going that far.
Easy, Bob.
I may be a little off my rocker, but and the other candidates for team MVP, I'm saying he would get this nod over TJ Lang and David Bakhtiari.
Yeah, I agree with all those choices. I really do. Another one that I would throw in there, I don't know. He might not fit the MVP scenario. But I think unsung hero Micah Hyde has to be mentioned in there for the versatility he showed. He's played nickel, dime, and safety this year, and he hasn't been bad.
No? Okay.
So that's one to just throw in there. I wouldn't necessarily think he would get it if this was a real award, but still.
So I went back and looked, Mike, at where I wrote this thing on Labor Day, 7 days before the start of the season, the most important Packers, where I had Perry. I put him at number 19. But I was kind of fretting that I was putting him too high because we didn't know. He was a starter over Peppers all camp, but we didn't know when the shooting started. We didn't know where Peppers would be in relation to him, right?
Right.
No one knew that.
Right.
So I had him at 19. He's top five now.
Oh, yeah, without question. Without question.
He's got, this is my stuff now. He's got, I define a pressure as the combination of sacks, knockdowns, and hurries. And I've used the same criteria for the last two categories for 25 years. So you may disagree with the total, but at least I've been consistent. And I got him with 14 pressures right now. Second place is Mike Daniels with 8. I don't have those things right here. I think Perry's career high in pressures is 18.5.
Hasn't he already reached his career high in sacks?
Exceeded
it in 4 games.
We know what he's done against the run. I mean, I consider him the most instrumental guy in that number one ranked run defense.
I agree.
He's got 3 tackles for loss. The leader is Jake Ryan with 5. I don't know what to say about Nick Perry. I guess I wrote a lot about him today, but for a guy in his 5th year to make a jump like this, it is so rare, Mike. I went back through my basic 35 years of covering, and I tried to look at players who really came on that late in their career. Just a couple of examples. Al Harris, I mean, he was elsewhere for the first 6 years. Then he started in Green Bay for the first time his first year. That was his 7th year, but he didn't become an elite corner till his 9th year. Another guy, Billy Schrader, the wide receiver. 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. In his 6th year, he became a starter. He persevered, the small school player, and then he became a starter for 5 years, 3 in Green Bay and 2 in Detroit. Who else? James Jones. I mean, he played a lot his first 5, but he didn't have his greatest year till year 6. Other players in their... I'm sorry, go ahead, Mike.
I'm just curious. I never saw this player live, but I remember reading his stats, and I wonder, would Tremont fit in this category? Tremont Williams, the corner?
He was a heck of a nickelback in his 2nd year or 3rd year.
Okay.
Yeah, but there are some, there's no doubt. All right, 5th year guys, Robert Brown. He was at the alumni game. They announced him, Robert Brown.
Okay.
I love this guy. I love covering Robert. Covered him for 10 years, you know. Guy like that, I mean, I'd love to talk to him even today. I really would. Never get a chance to see these older players. Drafted as a linebacker out of VPI, 235, eventually became a DE at 270. Very tough run player. Didn't start till his 5th year. Who else? James Campen, the O-line coach. Entered the league with the Saints as a free agent in 86. Won a job in Green Bay as a starter in 90, replacing Blair Bush. Had a good career until a hamstring injury ended his career at Dallas in October of 93. Other 5th-year guys. Marco Rivera started, I think, in his 3rd year, but he didn't have a great year until his 5th year. Mike Wall, the other tremendous guard for Mike Sherman, he started also earlier, but didn't have a Pro Bowl year at guard, didn't come into his own again until his 5th year. 4th year guys who made the huge jump, wide receiver Donald Driver, quarterback Aaron Rodgers, tight end Mark Shimura, safety Darren Sharper. And the huge third-year jumpers with their career totally on the line after doing nothing was a guard from Iowa, Ron Hallstrom, a first-round pick. 3rd year, became a player, hadn't done anything for 2 years. Earl Dotson, a tackle from Texas A&I, 3rd-round pick in 93, did diddly. Tom Lovett, the line coach, said it's do or die for Earl. He told me that before training camp started. Started and went on to start for 6 years and played good ball. And I think I got one more third-year jumper, T.J. Lang. Didn't do anything, really. He was, you know, kind of a knucklehead, I guess, as he's described himself. third year. He started at guard, and he's been good ever since. So this is rare territory for Nick Perry. Are you stunned by this, Mike?
Yeah, I mean, I really... Well, I can't say that I'm stunned necessarily by the level of play because I had never really seen him play at all. He wasn't healthy, really, for much of last year. Yeah. And so I don't know what I'm more surprised with. Am I more surprised that a guy who has never stayed healthy for a season or a camp in his entire career has now made it three straight months, August, September, October, with no injuries that have kept him out? Or am I more surprised at how much he's jumped based on what I've heard about him in the past? I don't know. You can't be wrong with whichever one you choose. Are you surprised that he stayed healthy given all he's been through? You know what they say, injured players continue to get injured.
Yeah, they sure do. Yeah, I guess I am. I wonder if he is, you know. He's lost weight. He's under 260. He told me that, and I think he looks sleeker, Mike. A scout a couple years ago told me he looked like he looked like he was encased in cement. He was thick, you know, thick lower half. And even though he ran 4.58 at 271, he didn't play to that speed. He was a pure power player, Mike, when he came into the league. He played down at USC as a 4.3 DE, drafted as a 3.4. Ted Thompson gambled on greatness, but the transition was really difficult for him. He was a fish out of water trying to drop and cover, and he became just a bull-rushing power player. That's all he could do. Now he's really worked on his coming off the edge. He's trying to incorporate more speed. And of the 9 pressures in which I could determine what his attack plan was, 8 of those 9 came off the edge using more speed. So he's got an arsenal now. I don't know how long it's... I mean, he's going to be up against Tyron Smith. I assume Smith can play this week. That's going to be a tremendous test for him. This is maybe the best O-line in the league. So, but Nick Perry, I don't know what to say. I mean...
Can he keep it up? Can he play this way the rest of the season, or at least a good chunk of it?
I really don't know. I mean, I'm sure he's caught some people off guard.
Right.
I mean, yeah, they've seen him playing 30% of the downs the last 4 years. Now he's playing 76%. I don't know if he can or not, but I sure like his strength and his power and his attitude now.
He's really, really strong. Really strong. 36, I think, on the bench press coming out. 35, 36,
35,
something like that.
35, Mike.
Okay.
38.5 vert. I mean, he's a stud. And not many people turn it around in their fifth year.
Another thing that I think sort of gives you an idea of how well he's playing is he has, in my opinion, played leaps and bounds above Clay Matthews this season. And Clay Matthews was a guy that, you know, comes with the reputation of being, you know, a lot thought of as the best rusher on this team in certain situations, and he certainly proved that before he moved to inside linebacker. But I can think of 8 or 9 plays just in my head that impressed me with Nick Perry either getting into the backfield or making a strong play. With Matthews, I can maybe think of 1, 2 that he's had this season. To me, it's just been a big gap between them, in my opinion.
I'm just not sure. Down in, down out, I'm just not sure if I'd say that, but your point's well taken. Yeah.
Now, before we talk about the Cowboys a little bit, let's finish up the injury talk with the Packers, and specifically, let's look at the running back position. So Eddie Lacy leaves the game against the Giants, hurts his ankle, spends most of the second half sitting on a training table and then trying out a tape job and then sitting on the training table and trying out a tape job. He never comes back. Starks finishes the game, and then Starks pops up on the injury report as well with a knee problem. Starks is also out of town and won't be back until Saturday. He's dealing with a death in the family, and the Packers obviously excused him to go attend to that. So if he is to play this weekend, he is both banged up and potentially not going to practice at all, depending on when he gets to Green Bay on Saturday. Lacy has not practiced to any significant degree yet this week. He's been out there, but he hasn't done much. And he's had ankle problems in the past. What do you think of this scenario that they've got themselves into?
So, Mike, do you think Ty Montgomery could play a bunch of snaps at running back?
You know, I was toying with that this week. If I went up to Ty Montgomery and said, Ty, how many carries do you think you could get in a game and, like, still be somewhat effective? I wondered if the answer would be over or under 15. Now, I don't think they'd ever give him 15 carries in a game, but I kind of think 12 to 15 is his limit given his inexperience with the position. And I don't mean inexperience from the standpoint of he doesn't know what he's supposed to do. I mean the inexperience of he's not used to getting 300-pound guys piled on him 12 times in a game. How often does a receiver get tackled by a 300-pound guy? Yeah. It's a whole different level of body pounding, really, that you have to deal with. So I don't know.
He didn't look real good on that runoff right tackle the other day.
He did not.
Randall Cobb is hurting with a neck injury. Randall Cobb is the guy who will bring it to a defense. He's a very rugged individual. He's a tough guy, and he will stick it up in there. But they can't be using Cobb running inside in this game.
So here's the question that I've kicked around to our other colleague, Tom Silverstein. Let's say only one of them, Lacy or Starks, can play. It doesn't matter which one. Let's just say one of them can play. If there's only one of them, and they're the only running back on the roster, do you take a risk and go with what you have, and maybe you give 15 to 20 carries to that running back, maybe you give 4 to Ripkowski, maybe you give 2 to Montgomery, and maybe you give 1 or 2 to Cobb? Because that right there would get you to 25 carries. And if Rodgers scrambles a couple times, you could push 30.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the risk of only having one true running back. So if only one of them is healthy, do you think, would you take the risk, or would you promote somebody from the practice squad and have to cut a guy?
My inclination, this is a big game, my inclination would be to do everything you can to win this game. Now, I don't know anything about Don Jackson. I mean, from Nevada, pretty good high school or college player, flunked his physical on the eve of camp. They didn't sign him. He's never been tackled since December, I assume.
Pretty much, yeah. Well, he was, OTAs you can't really tackle. So, yeah, it's been a long time.
So he's been banged around a little bit during practice the last couple weeks or whatever. Can he help?
I don't know. I guess the question is, would you rather him take a decent amount of carries if whoever is healthy gets hurt? Or would you rather have Ripkowski and Montgomery carry it 10 times each?
If they had John Kuhn, he could be their tailback.
That's a very good point.
Seriously.
Yeah. And I bet they would do that, too.
Not going to run around anybody, but he's smart, and he could. He knows how to carry the ball. He did at Shippensburg, right?
Yep.
So that's a bit of a problem they have right now.
It is. So
don't you think Starks will be in this game participating? He's coming back Saturday, McCarthy said, right?
Yes. We don't know when Saturday. We don't know if it's Saturday morning. We don't know if it's the afternoon and he'll miss practice. So if he doesn't practice at all, would you play him without being in any of the meetings, without practicing a single play, and he's got a knee injury? Would you play him?
If he's healthy, yes.
Okay.
After 7 years, I think he knows enough.
Okay.
He's coming off a bad game. That's another...
True.
Factor.
And then Lacy, of course. Last year he hurt his ankle as well in week 2 against the Seahawks. Went out of the game in the first quarter. Starks finished and carried 20 times for 95 yards. The next week, most people didn't think Lacy was going to play. He played and had one of his best games of the season. I think he had 90-something yards against the 49ers. It was like 18 carries for 97 or something like that. It was one of his better games in a subpar season. So it wouldn't surprise me if Lacy actually plays pretty well. I think he's certainly going to play. I would be surprised if Lacy didn't play.
Okay.
Especially based on what everybody's saying. McCarthy thought he'd be okay. Rodgers thought he'd be okay. Sermons, the running backs coach, thought he'd be okay. Anything else that jumps out to you on the Packers injury report?
Let's talk about the tight end, Jared Cook, who's missed... When was he hurt? In Minnesota?
The Lions.
So he's missed a game and a half.
Yes.
All right, Jared Cook's got a high ankle sprain. How's it looking?
Well, it's what? So the Lions game was which weekend? September...
3 weeks ago?
September 25th. Yeah, somewhere around the 25th.
Okay.
So it's 2.5 weeks ago. We're still seeing him in a walking boot. We're still seeing him have crutches around him at times. That's not a good sign to me. And remember, every high ankle sprain is different, and everyone heals at a different rate. I've said this before on the podcast, and I'll say it again. Ty Montgomery had a high ankle sprain last year, week 6 against the Chargers, never played again. That doesn't mean Cook's not going to play again, but I think you have to consider the full realm of possibilities with how severe a high ankle sprain can be.
Yeah. It hurts the offense.
Without question.
We've seen Cook do some darn good things. Obviously, he's more dynamic than Rodgers, so if that drags and drags, I don't know. Perillo?
I wonder if it's at all similar to the year JerMichael hurt his knee. They went into that season thinking that they were going to use JerMichael so much. They built a lot of the offense around him. He was going to be spread out wide. I'm not saying that the Packers plan to feature Jared Cook, someone that was new to their organization, in the same manner, but I certainly think that there's some packages and some alignments that they might not feel comfortable running with Richard Rodgers and Perillo, but they would have run with Cook.
Agreed. How about Sam Shields?
I don't think Sam's going to play. He's back in meetings. He's certainly progressing through the concussion protocol, but he still hasn't practiced. He's still not cleared. I don't think it happens this week for Sam.
So that's the Packer injury report.
Well, let's take one more look at this. TJ Lang and JC Treader, neither one was a full participant today, and Treader just popped up for the first time with a back injury. Would that concern you at all that two of the interior guys have not practiced this week?
Well,
I think Lang's going to play.
Lang practiced Wednesday.
Right, not in pads.
Oh, right. I don't know. I just assume these guys will play.
I agree. I think both of them are going to play.
Yep.
Anything else we want to discuss about the Packers here before we take a break and then move on to the scouting report?
No.
Okay. We're going to take a quick pause here. We'll come back and we'll go through the Dallas Cowboys.
At Cannon and Dunphy, we're proud of our winning reputation. We're also proud to be the exclusive sponsor of the excellent Journal Sentinel coverage of our great football team. I'm Bill Cannon. To learn more about our winning team, go to our website.
All right, so the Dallas Cowboys come to town Sunday afternoon, Mike. They're 4-1, and they are 4.5-point underdogs, right? The Cowboys. I talked to 4 scouts. 3 took the Packers. All said it was within 6-point margin. It's a tough game.
I agree.
They're coming off a home victory over the Bengals. They were up 28-0 and won it 28-14. Mike McCarthy's beaten them 5 in a row, including 4 at Lambeau. Packers killed them last year at Lambeau in December. Matt
killed
Castle
on the ground.
Yeah.
200 and something yards rushing.
Matt Castle was the starting quarterback. Back in command. It was a big victory.
That's when Shields suffered his concussion last year.
And that's when Mike McCarthy returned to play calling.
Correct.
Packers had 435 yards on a rainy. That was also a late starter, Mike.
Yeah, it was.
Okay. All right, so the Cowboys will. They're, as a scout said, their offense is one of the major stories of the season.
I agree.
Let's go to Dak Prescott. 6'2", 235, 25 on the Wunderlich, 4.78 on the 40. He's having a fantastic year.
No question about it. I mean, the poise with which he's played, I know that word's been thrown around a lot, but if you watch it, it's really impressive. He never looks rattled, even when pressure comes, and Dom Capers said that today. He said, you can throw pressure at the guy, and he still seems to make the right decisions, and that's high praise for a rookie.
Could he fall apart? Could he choke? I asked a scout that on Tuesday. He says, you think so. This is the time you see rookies fall apart, but he's seen no evidence of it so far.
I saw one tweet last week from Adam Schefter. I guess he had spoken to somebody with the Bengals. And going into that game this past weekend, the Bengals staff felt that Prescott had thrown 0 poor passes all season. Not one. They didn't think anyone was truly a poor pass.
All right, Prescott, his arms, okay. It's not great. He's a tough runner, ran 41 touchdowns at Mississippi State. They're just kind of, you know, Scott Linehan, I think, is a terrific coordinator. I love what he did with Dante Culpepper in Minnesota in 03 and 04 and 02. Those are the best years Culpepper ever had. This guy is playing what he has. It's run the ball 51%. It's throw off play action, take what's there, and try to protect Prescott if he needs protecting, and it's just working very well.
So what else is around him?
The running back, Ezekiel Elliott. Fourth pick in the draft. I missed almost all of training camp with, a hamstring, I believe it was. Kind of didn't look like he was impatient the first couple games, didn't run that great. The last three games, he's got, 412 yards?
He was, when you did your draft series, he was the consensus top choice running back, right?
19-0, vote of scouts.
And what did people think he was going to be? Was he worthy of a first-round pick that high?
Words like complete, best back since Adrian Peterson entering the draft. There were some character issues with this player, and some of that surfaced in Dallas during the offseason.
He likes to party a little
bit. Yeah, yeah. He's 5'11 and a half, 225, ran 4.48. You see that breakaway speed against the Bengals. He's got body lean. He falls forward. He finishes. He's not great in blitz pickup, but they don't have to take him out of the lineup. He plays third downs.
What do you think about him against this run defense?
It's going to be a great matchup.
It really is.
Really going to be interesting.
It's going to be fun. And part of the reason it's going to be fun is the guys blocking for him.
Yeah. Let me finish. Okay, Alfred Morris, the ex-Redskin. He's not a bad backup. Redskins thought he was used up. Cowboys, they kind of like him. All right, let's stick at the skill positions first, Mike.
Okay.
Okay?
Yep.
Dez Bryant. Now, he was limited
the last
Wednesday
days,
and Thursday.
I don't expect him to play.
I don't either. Okay. Hairline fracture in the knee.
Yeah. And Jerry Jones, I think I read somewhere that Jerry Jones said in his radio show that he was just doing individual work the last couple days. So I think it's just them sort of working him back in slowly. I don't think he's going to play.
They got
didn't
a bye.
Play last year either.
No, he did not. They have a bye, and then they play the Eagles, a division team, a very big game. Okay, who do they got? They got Terrence Williams, kind of a deep threat from Baylor, 6'2". Body catcher. He's okay.
Just a guy. I think he's just a guy.
He's sort of a... You think he's a okay, too? I do.
Yeah.
All right.
I think his traits warrant more production than he's had.
Yeah. All right, Cole Beasley, 5'8 in the slot. 5'8, Mike. He's had four good years. He just gets open. He's fast, too, 4.50. He's a good player.
I like him.
Me, too.
I think he's a good player. I really do.
All right, number three now becomes Bryce Butler, former Raider draft pick. Kind of a sleek guy, got some size. He's okay. And Lucky Whitehead will run jet sweeps and that stuff. All right, now their number one target now without Dez is Jason Witten. He's old as dirt. He can't run at all anymore.
36, I think. 35, 36.
But he uses his body. He's smart as heck, crafty, pushes off, knows how to get open, shields people. He did some good things against the Bengals after the catch.
You saw that stiff arm?
Bouncing into people.
Impressive.
Swaim is the blocker. I don't know. I like Gavin Escobar, who doesn't even play anymore. He must be in the doghouse. This guy can get down the seam. He's 6'6", but he's not a factor. All right, now the O-line. Well, they got two players who are just about at the top of their profession. The left tackle, Tyron Smith. He's like a dancing bear, Mike, the old cliche. 36 and 3/8 arms. Fast. Was he 4.95 a couple years ago? He's a great player. He's better than Trent Williams of the Redskins.
There's a lot of things that I see covering this league that impress me because these guys have such tremendous athleticism and body types that I can't even imagine. You know, they're just wired and built so different than I am. And one of the things that I find remarkable is when they run toss plays to the left, and Smith just takes off running down the field. I mean, when he starts as a lead blocker or on a screen, something like that, it's incredible to see him move. It really is. 4.95 for a guy that big. When's the last time you remember a lineman that big running under 5? Doesn't happen often.
No, it doesn't, no. 6'5", 320 out there, Mike. I saw it, too.
Heck of an athlete.
Yeah. All right, the right guard, Zach Martin, who played left tackle at Notre Dame, he's considered to be one of the top two or three guards in the business. Really impressed with him. Gets off low, gets off hard, gets to the second level, really sustains at the second level. He's hard to knock off his feet. He doesn't overextend or lunge. His arms aren't long, 32 3/4, and I think maybe it could hurt him in protection if you could get to an edge, but it's hard to do.
He led the way for Elliott on a number of runs. They run behind him a lot. It was, you know, right that touchdown that Elliott had up the middle, the shorter touchdown, ran right behind Martin. He's a good player.
Travis Frederick, the center from Wisconsin, Walworth Bigfoot High School, 34 on the Wunderlic. You know, I remember writing about this before the draft 4 years ago. One of the worst athletes, high pick at center in quite a while. But, you know, some scouts really defended him, said he's too much of a football player to ignore, and he has really proven them correct. Frederick is a good player. I don't see athletic limitations when you watch him. He's a strong guy. He doesn't make mistakes. He's a Pro Bowl center. All right, the left guard was Lael Collins from LSU. He won the job over Ronald Leary when Leary got hurt last year. Leary missed the offseason. He was mad, wanted to get out of there. But then Collins suffered a season-ending toe injury a couple games ago, and now Leary's in there. Leary is a mauler. Tiny hands, 8 5/8 inches. It's like Michael Vick size hands. But he's a good player. There's nothing wrong with him.
Yeah,
he can be beaten protection, Mike. You see that against the Bengals. But he's up against Geno Atkins the other day, so what do you expect? Doug Free, another Wisconsin product. Man, amazing. He's from Manitowoc High School, the Shipbuilders, right down the road here.
That's their nickname?
Shortened to Ships. Hmm. But the name is Shipbuilders.
It's not like the shipyard down there at First Coast.
No. Right. Free, you know, he's been in the league 10 years. He started at left. He started at right. He's lost some flexibility. What do you expect? And he's a bit of a waistbender, and he gave up a bad strip sack against the Bengals to Carlos Dunlap. But, you know, he's still got pretty good feet. He got a lot of seasoning. He's a serviceable, functional player. I had to call somebody the weak link this week. I hated to do it. It was by default. He's fine. So that's their line. That's their offense.
All right, let's flip over to the defense now.
Scott Linehan, again, is a fine play-calling coordinator. All right, the D. Well, this is Rod Marinelli's for the third year, a coordinator. And it jumps off the tape, Mike, their desire and their effort. It truly does. But, I mean, I said all this last year about this defense coming in here and the Packers mauled them and all that hard work meant nothing. They got ripped for 435 and they got drilled 28-7. So take it all with a grain of salt. But Marinelli has his players. He coaches them hard and they play hard. Now, do they have enough talent? They may not. The front four, there's not a standout. A new addition, DeMarcus Lawrence, the defensive end, just came off drug suspension. Returned last week, played 17 snaps, looked pretty good. He should be the best pass rusher on paper. He's quick. He was a second-round pick 3 years ago, but he's not in football shape yet. All right, the starting base ends in that 4-3, one-gapping 4-3, Tyrone Crawford. Now, I love Tyrone Crawford from Boise a couple 3 years ago. I don't think he's playing that good this year. One scout thought he was fine. I just don't see it right now, the production, but he's still pretty good. Jack Crawford, another big physical, he looks like a 3-4 defensive end, but instead he's a base 4-3 end. He's okay, first-year starter, fourth-year guy. Inside, you got kind of the interchangeable DTs. They're both short. Terrell McClain, 6 years in the league. He's pretty quick. He can be disruptive. He's not a great player, but he's okay. And Malik Collins, a rookie third-round pick from Nebraska. Collins shows some activity, too. Interesting player. You know, there's a great crop of D linemen this year, and they got him in the third. It was a position of strength, and he's been okay. Cedric Thornton's an old Eagle, 3-4 base end. He's all right. The former Seahawk, Benson Mayowa, is another designated pass rusher like Lawrence. And David Irving, who sat out with a concussion, I see he returned to practice today. He's a big, huge, athletic guy, and he could do a little damage. So that's their front.
I watched the tape of the Bengals game, and as you mentioned, there's not necessarily a standout guy or a guy that attracts your attention that you want to watch play in and play out. But what I found fascinating was how much they move around. And I don't necessarily mean interchanging positions. I mean all these stunts and twists and things. They have guys looping around one guy, looping around another guy, looping one gap, two gaps. They move around so much that it was almost hard to figure out who was playing where because everyone moves like crazy. Now, if I remember correctly in reading your scouting report, that's how they try and generate pressure rather than bringing a lot of traditional blitzes, right?
Right. Now, Mike, when you asked Aaron Rodgers about that, about stunting and twisting liberally, what did he say?
So what he said was pretty interesting. First of all, he mentioned the obvious, which is when the defensive line is moving around that much, there has to be very strong communication with the offensive linemen. They need to know when they're passing off one guy to the other, and they need to know who is responsible for who. But the part that I found interesting was Rodgers basically, in as many words, and not in any sort of a provocative fashion, but he basically said, if you're going to twist and stunt, you're going to open up holes for me to run, and I'm happy to do that because I'm a decent scrambler. So that was sort of saying, okay, if you want to do it, bring it on. I'm happy to scramble for 45, 50 yards. It'll be interesting to see how much they do it.
He's dead right, and I think he has hurt Rod Marinelli's defenses over the year. Okay, linebackers, Sean Lee is their best one. He plays every snap in the first five games. Well, that's something.
That's pretty impressive.
Like A.J. Hawk used to.
Has Clinton Dix played every snap? I think he might have.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Lee, you know, he's kind of a small guy. He's really good in coverage. He's instinctive as heck. He's not going to take people on and strike a blow and crash somebody, but he's a really a good player.
Why'd he move from inside to outside?
Well, he's the will backer in a 4-3, which is really an inside guy, Mike. You know, you mean you're stacked, and then when they're in their nickel stuff, he's, you know, inside. So he's more of an inside.
Okay.
You know, there's Sam outside backer. Kyle Wilbur's injured. They got Andrew Gackar this year, a free agent from the Chargers. They're just both guys. The other inside backer, the middle backer, Anthony Hitchens from Iowa, the fourth or third round pick. He's not bad. He's small. He's not great in coverage, but he strikes a blow. He's okay. All right, the best part of their D is the secondary. Morris Claiborne, the sixth pick in 2012, started to come on finally last year when he was about ready to get waived out of the league. He got hurt, and now he came back this year, and he's even better.
Similar to the Nick Perry story.
Yeah, it is. That's a good point, Mike. He's a press man specialist, six on the Wunderlich. But this guy
Six.
Is playing good football.
Wow.
He's playing good football. Brandon Carr from the GLIAC, Grand Valley State, I believe it is. Ninth year, ex-chief. He's a solid number two. He's not a number one the way he's getting paid, but he's a fine player, and who cares? This guy can play.
Yeah.
He's still good. He's 6 feet. All right, the nickelback would be Orlando Scandrick. He might be starting also ahead of Claiborne, but Scandrick's got a hammy, and he's not playing. That hurts him. So Anthony Brown, I remember at the Combine, Mike, all of a sudden I was left at a table this year next to Anthony Brown from Purdue. It was just the two of us sitting there. And I was talking to him, and I don't know, the guy ran 4.34 the next day, and he got drafted out of Purdue. I mean, you know how bad that program is.
Hey, Drew Brees is taking offense to this.
And, you know, he's held up pretty good. Now, he's not great, but he can certainly run with Randall Cobb or whoever else is in the slot. And at least he has speed.
Mm-hmm.
All right, now, safety. Barry Church, a smart player, a box safety, makes a lot of tackles. He's okay.
He got a lot of praise, interestingly, from receivers coach Luke Getsy today.
He did?
Somebody asked Getsy about what he thought of the secondary, and, you know, he said... he basically gave a little bit of a rundown on everybody, but he had some pretty impressive words for Church and the way he can sort of marshal the defense a little bit from the back end.
Okay. Byron Jones. Mike, I think he had the greatest broad jump of all time, 12-3 or something.
Set a world record.
Yeah. His vert was 44. Ran 4-3. 3A?
This is what the UConn football program is known for, Bob.
That's where he's from, yeah.
Yeah, and that's a joke, by the way. The UConn football program is not good at all.
Was he good at UConn? I can't really remember this.
Played
the
corner,
draft.
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
Played corner, and there was some discussion about whether he'd be a corner or a safety. At this level, too, not unlike the discussion that surrounded Jalen Ramsey this year. I mean, he was good at UConn, but it's hard to say because nobody pays attention to that program.
He tackles high.
Does he?
Yeah. He's strong. He's big. I like him. He's getting better all the time.
Yeah, he's a good player.
And then they have an enforcer who used to start there, J.J. Wilcox, and he plays in packages. They go like 317, 417, 407. It's weird. 317, does that add up? Yeah. Okay. That's the D of Rod Marinelli.
Okay.
It's okay.
How about teams?
Great kicker in Dan Bailey, really good, but he's got a bad back. Punter's fine. Chris Jones, lefty. Lucky Whitehead does all the returning. He's okay. They're okay on teams.
You know, Lucky Whitehead, it's fun. I mean, I know they look similar, so, you know, that's the first thing. But he's kind of like their new version of Dwayne Harris, you know, and does some of the things that Harris did in the return game and on the jet sweeps and all that. I'm not necessarily as high as high on Lucky Whitehead as a returner as some people are, but I kind of like what he does on offense a little bit. I don't know. I watched the Bengal game and I was thinking to myself, this guy can do a little something.
He's got a lot of guts.
Oh, yeah, he's tough.
When he runs.
There's no doubt he's tough. Yeah. Yeah.
All right, so that's the Cowboys Sunday afternoon. What else are we working on here, Mike?
Well, we got to take some questions here.
Got to.
So let me take a minute here to scroll through, and let's see what we got. All right, so we've received your questions. Thank you very much for sending some of those in. Let's see what we've got here. Okay, this question comes from JFB. We mentioned it quickly but didn't really discuss the rationale behind it. Why was Joe Callahan the person to be let go today?
Three quarterbacks is a luxury when injuries strike. They think they can get him back on the practice squad. Mike McCarthy's spoken extremely highly of him, along with others in the organization. And they just think they can get him back. They may not be able to, but you got to win games now to a certain extent, and he's expendable.
All right, this next question comes from JD. JD wants to know about Jeff Janis. He says, Janis got 13 offensive snaps last week. Do you see them continuing to rotate him in to try and utilize his speed? I was surprised he got 13 snaps. Before the game, I was thinking maybe 5, 6, somewhere in that range, which would have been more in line with his role last year. So I don't know. I don't know if they're going to continue to use him. I think that they want to at least involve him a little bit in each game. But as we've seen, there's been games like the Minnesota game where Nelson, Cobb, and Adams played almost every single snap. And then there's been games like the first half against Detroit and the first drive against the Giants where everybody plays. So I think it's going to depend on how much McCarthy and his staff tend to fall back into their patterns or how much they can commit to rotating these guys. It'll be interesting to watch.
Mike, if they need a roster spot, and looks like they're going to, right? There's 7 wideouts. Obviously, it's the most they've ever had in their history.
Right.
If they cut Aberderis, is he practice squad eligible? I think so.
I think he is, too. And I don't necessarily think he would get claimed.
No, me either.
So, yeah, I mean, I don't see it. He doesn't have a role on offense. He doesn't have a role on special teams anymore now that Janis is back. And the only other guy that doesn't have a role on special teams is Davante Adams, but he's actually had an okay start to the year. So I think if they're going to cut a wide receiver, it has to be Aberderis at this point.
I agree.
This question comes from Eduardo Anakin, and Eduardo's asked questions before, so we thank you for continuing to listen. We talked about Ty Montgomery earlier and his ability as a running back. He wants to know, what do you think about using Ty Montgomery as the change of pace back, even with Starks playing? So I think he means sort of like a third down back. Is that something that they could do? The one thing is, we see these guys in the backfield a lot, you know, and other than those short, quick outs, we don't see him catch the ball very often. And I don't think Montgomery's ever caught a pass out of the backfield. I think it's only been Cobb.
Last year, did Montgomery run jet sweeps?
Not that I know of.
From the perimeter, no.
He's not that fast. He's fast in the first 10 yards, 15 yards. And then I don't...
He was described as a terrific runner after the catch, with a running back body coming out of Stanford.
Yeah.
I just didn't like him on that one carry the other day, but last year I did like him with the ball in his hand. So I want to see more, but I just don't know.
Let's see. This question comes from Keith Aaron. This would be an easy one for you. Is this the best defense of McCarthy's tenure? Excuse me, best run defense of McCarthy's tenure?
Well, they led the league in 09.
Capers' first year.
You're right. Johnny Jolly and...
Who else was on that team on defense? You remember? Matthews would have been at outside?
Yeah, rookie year.
Okay.
Jolly.
A.J.
Ryan.
Monk.
Yeah, Ryan was playing pretty good then. Ryan Pickett. Cullen Jenkins.
Some big boys.
Yeah, there were.
Pickett and Jolly were huge.
Woodson was a physical tackler, which really helped him. Nick Collins was on that team.
Yep.
Tremont Williams is a starting corner. Who's the other outside backer beside? Not
Barnett.
Aaron Campman. Yeah, Barnett was starting inside. Desmond Bishop was still on the bench. He became the starter in 2010 when Barnett got hurt. Who's the other outside backer? I don't know.
I don't know.
I can't think of it.
Okay. So what do you think? Is this up there, at least for the first couple games, with as well as that team played?
Yeah.
It's got to be.
But like I said last time, I've seen some crazy, terrible starts and good finishes and then vice versa. So right. you just don't know where this thing's going to go.
And then the last one we'll take here, we've gotten a couple questions about Sam Shields, so we'll go with this one. Will Shields ever be the same player? It's so hard to say. It really is. You know, I know that there's some people out there that really think the cause of the concussions is Shields ducking his head on certain tackles. I'm not a doctor. I have no idea if that's what's causing it. You don't know what type of adjustments the coaching staff asked him to make or is trying to point out to him going forward. I find it hard to believe that a guy that's had 5 concussions can be completely the exact same player, but I still think Shields can be a good player when he's healthy.
I hope he comes back, yeah, and plays well.
Yeah.
He's a good guy. You know?
He is a very good guy. Yep. Very nice guy, very polite. So he continues to move through the concussion protocol, and we'll see when and if he gets back on the field for the Packers. Until then, we've exhausted our time here. And what do we got on the way out, Bob?
We got Rare Earth throwing it down, baby.
All right. We'll talk to you guys soon.